In case you think we're going to go through all the beverages today, we're not. But we do have Tyson Stelzer, who's a member of Palate, a Wine Communicator of the Year on multiple occasions, and our resident wine expert here at Travel Writers Radio. And tonight we talk about how to choose an imported wine when you only really have the name of the region or the appellation, not a winemaker like we would tend to purchase from a label or a brand that we know here. So here's Tyson Stelzer. Welcome back to the show, Tyson.
Great to be back on, Graham. How are you?
Yeah, really, really good. You know, the other day, just for sheer bastardry and no other reason, I took $20 and I thought, I wanted to see how much wine I can buy for $20, not in a cardboard box, right? So I went to Aldi and I bought three bottles of wine, award-winning wine, I have to say, for $19, a $6.99 Chardonnay, a $6.99 Cab Sav, and a $6.99 Shiraz from Heathcote, and a $4.99 Cab Sav from Central Victoria. Yeah. I thought that was pretty impressive, and I've actually had I'm not a huge drinker, to be really honest with you.
Have you opened them, though?
I've opened one. The $4.99 thing called the Pond was quite drinkable.
Was it?
Yep. Okay. Yep, it's not going to strip the paint off the back fence, which is always a good test I apply. But, you know, I think it's just buying power. And anyway, that got me thinking, you know, these are brands I didn't know, but I know a lot of people like to try wines from other parts of the world and can't obviously buy brands because they don't know the brand. All you may have is perhaps an appellation or a regional name.
Yeah.
And the actual winemaker or the wine grower isn't readily identified on the Cote d'Aron or you know, what you got. How do we work our way through that maze?
Yeah, it's a minefield, isn't it? And yes, you can buy wine for a few dollars a bottle. Yes, you will get better value if you spend a bit more than that in terms of getting some quality to drink. I guess it comes down to where and how you're going to drink it. So I find for me that If I'm going to go to the trouble of pouring a glass of wine, it's usually going to be with friends and a chance to celebrate life. And the step up in quality that you can get by spending $10 instead of $5 or $15 instead of $10 is astronomical. And I know those wines from Aldi, and you can get them from Dan Murphy's or Coles under their own brands as well. And they're competing for that bottom end of the market. But there is so much better wine that's available by spending a little bit.
Look,
you don't have to spend hundreds of dollars a bottle. Obviously, we can't afford that every night of the week. But there are some really smart wines out there for $20 a bottle.
This was not.
They run rings around anything for $5 or $10.
Yeah, this wasn't wine I was taking anywhere. You know, I was going to quietly have one of these at home. But it has happened in my house that the bride, in the middle of cooking something, will simply go to the wine cabinet, grab the first bottle her pour clutches onto, and suddenly there is a grey label going down the tube. And I'm thinking, I would have probably preferred to just drink that, not eat it. So that was another part of my figuring. But I just thought it was interesting that these were wines that had won awards at shows that you would recognise. You might have judged some of them, I don't know. Brisbane, Sydney, shows up around the New South Wales, Mudgee, whatever that's called up there. And I thought, well, somebody thinks it's all right.
For sure.
Anyway.
When you say won an award, are we talking a bronze medal?
Yes, silver, bronze, silver and gold.
Okay, yep.
If you go online, if you're intrigued that what I did sounds a bit weird, if you go online there, liquor's actually listed, not everything in the store, but obviously the lost leader product. And I would say half of what's listed online has won an award, a silver, a bronze, or a gold medal.
My rule with wine shows is to look for a significant number of trophies in a top capital city wine show. Unfortunately, there are so many wine shows around the world and so many medals given out left, right, and centre that you could almost win a medal for any wine.
For turning up.
So there's very little bearing on a medal randomly on a bottle unless there are multiple trophy wins in the major capital city shows.
Okay.
So from that point of view, I tend not to look too much at medals or bottles. It makes it hard because, you know, you can't, not like a library where you can go and browse the book before you buy it. When you're buying a bottle of wine, you can only judge it from the outside.
It's interesting that the wine industry hasn't been disrupted like the accommodation industry with Travelocity and these other human-powered sites that'll very, very quickly mark something down if it's not living up to its promise.
True.
I don't know, maybe that'll come in time.
Keeps us critics in the market anyway, that's for sure.
Yeah, so just to go back to the question of what you might do.
To get back to your question, after all, now there are a few guiding principles that I use when I'm looking for great value in wine. And the first one is that it's possible to make certain varieties at a budget better than others.
Right.
So when I'm looking for a white wine, things like Riesling is a perpetual bargain. You can get awesome Riesling for under $15, and there are even some reasonable ones under $12 on the shelf. In Australia, we make Shiraz more than anything else, and we do Shiraz well, from the bulk inland regions right through to some of the more boutique, cool climate regions. So Australia makes good value Shiraz. And another variety that often goes with Shiraz, or often stands alone too, is Grenache. And Grenache Shiraz Mourvèdre blends work well. And that introduces another rule about buying for value, and that is that while we often tend to look for single varietal wines, in fact, winemakers have the flexibility and dexterity with blending that allows them to create something that can often achieve a higher quality than a single varietal. So when I'm looking for reds from Australia, my favourite blend are those classic Australian Shiraz Cabernet blends, making some of the top flagships in Australia's history, but also some of the best bottles on the shelves under $20 too.
Mm. Yeah, you've only got to think of Wolf Blass. They used to call him a chemist, didn't they, for what he could conjure up in terms of blending. So when you talk about Riesling and things like that, are they cheaper to make because they don't need the age in vats? Is that where expense comes in?
There, number one is that they don't need to be so old. So the 2018 Rieslings will start to come onto the shelves very soon.
Mm.
They don't need to be oaked either. And oak is one of the most expensive inputs to wine apart from labour itself.
Yep.
And unlike a great Chardonnay, which really needs expensive barrels to show at its best, and that's why Chardonnay tends to be more expensive, and it also needs time in those barrels, so you can't get it to market the same year that it's made usually.
Yep.
Riesling doesn't require that, and for that reason, Riesling is great value. It's also a little bit, I don't know, Riesling to me never seems to be as trendy as it should be for the quality of what it is. And so there are wines out there like Pinot Gris is a good example, which is, in my mind, not nearly as noble a variety as Riesling. The greatest Pinot Gris of the world are not within an earshot of the great Rieslings, and yet it's more expensive because it's popular. And so Gris is perhaps not such good value. Sauvignon Blanc can be good value, but it's also been popular too. So there's been a lot of planting, a lot of production, a lot of bulk wines, and you don't necessarily get the quality because they can get away with selling substandard wines at lower prices because they will just sell.
Yeah. I'm wondering whether people aren't a little bit Sauv Blanc'd out, like they were Chardonnayed out a few years back. there's an awful lot of very green gooseberry material out there that, you know, if I have to pucker up to drink it, let alone kiss who's poured it, I'm giving it away.
I'd rather drink water than spend even $5 a bottle on some of those wines.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, now France makes a lot of wine, obviously. What would be the variety to look for? If we're Australian wine drinkers, what appellation should we be looking for to find something that's not going to shock us that, you know, we could judge the value in terms of how it tastes on our Aussie palate?
Three of my favourite regions in the world, Burgundy, Champagne, Bordeaux, awesome wines, but because they're marginal, because they make great wines so well, and because they command some of the highest prices on the planet, it's a challenge to find entry-level wines from those regions that are as good as what you can find from elsewhere. So if you want to buy cheap sparkling wine, don't buy Champagne. Buy something from another part of the world, like Tasmania. If you're going to buy red wines that are cheap from France, most of the time I would say you're going to find something better from Australia by the time you pay all the duties and costs and everything that inevitably get piled on. You can buy reasonable local wines when you're in Europe for €10 a bottle, but by the time they get here, they're 40 or 50.
Yep.
So that's the challenge. But that said, to answer your question, I look for some of the warmer regions of France because they're less marginal and make some pretty drinkable, luggable sort of quaffing wines. And one of the best examples of that is the Côte du Rhône,
right,
the biggest region of the Rhône Valley, where Grenache and its blends are king. And as I said before, blends often work so much better. So you get some beautiful Grenache blends from the Rhône at affordable prices.
Mm-hmm.
Going a little further south again to the great southern expanses of France, Provence is king of rosé, which is, of course, the darling of the world right now. We can't get enough of it.
Mm.
And they also make some pretty decent whites and reds there too. And they're quaffable, affordable, and they do make great wine at the top end too, of course. But in terms of value, I'd be looking there rather than going to the more cooler, refined regions like Champagne, Burgundy and Bordeaux.
Right. And I guess the other point, which you'd sort of alluded to, but I guess I'll emphasise, is that not every year is a good year in France, is it?
This is the other challenge, and another reason why some of those warmer regions are a little more reliable. Perhaps a bit like the Barossa Valley or Margaret River, which are relatively warm, and a bad season is not actually that bad.
Mm.
Unlike that, if you go further north in Europe to Champagne, Burgundy, or even Bordeaux over on the west coast, the difference between a great season and a bad season is diabolical.
Yeah.
So it's a case of learning your great vintages and sticking to those, whereas at least if you are down in Provence where it's warmer, a bad season is usually still pretty good.
Oh, that's great. Now, to something that I know you care an awful lot about is bubbly water or bubbly wine. You've got your taste events coming up. Where do they start, and when are we going to see you in Melbourne?
We are coming to Melbourne very soon. This is our biggest event series, actually my biggest event series that I've ever had the privilege of hosting anywhere in the world. Across Australia this year, Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, Canberra, Adelaide, we have 81 champagne houses showcasing literally 267 cuvées across all of the events. And Melbourne this year is our biggest event of all. We're coming to Melbourne on the 20th of August. It's a Monday. There's a trade and media tasting in the afternoon, a public tasting that night. And of all of the events that we're hosting, there are more houses there. It's a bigger room. It will be literally the biggest champagne tasting Australia has ever seen. And to my knowledge, this will be the biggest anywhere outside of Champagne itself.
Okay. And whereabouts is it? Where's it being held?
We're hosting it in the amazing space of the Plaza Ballroom under the Regent's.
Oh, I know it well, yeah.
It's a beautifully deco room, which to me very much communicates the mood of Champagne. And perhaps just as importantly, it's huge, and it needs to be because we've got so many houses
coming. So many people.
So many guests coming along. The tickets are selling fast, and it always sells out. But now's the time to get on at tastechampagne.com.au.
Beautiful. Well done. Thanks very much for your time again and your expertise, Tyson. Much appreciated.
Always a pleasure to chat. Graham, look forward to raising a glass with you at Taste Champagne.
Yes, I will. Okay, we'll see you there.
Take care. Bye for now.
Bye. That was Tyson Stelzer. We spoke to him, or I spoke to him, earlier this afternoon. You're listening to the Travel Writers Show on JAIR 87.8 FM.